that synagogue is safe.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by General Steel.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. In California, the snow plows, snow blowers, and shovels are out as major winter storm hits even some areas that rarely see snow. CBS's Carter Evans reports.
Historic and hazardous. California is dealing with blizzards in some areas for the first time ever. Near Los Angeles, this snow is bringing back memories of 1989. Snarling traffic and closing a major interstate.
I-5 and the blowing snow is just pelting me in the face. The road is shut down right now. Normally, it's one of the state's busiest arteries. So this is an unusual sight. Not a single car for miles.
Due to snow and ice storms this week, Portland was largely shut down for a second day. And in Michigan, some 500,000 customers are still without power. 1 year after Russia invaded Ukraine, China is urging the two countries to begin peace talks. More from CBS's Charlie Daggett in Kyiv.
Russia's ally China has called for a comprehensive ceasefire and a 12-point peace plan. President Zelensky says he'll meet with Chinese President Xi Jinping, but didn't elaborate on exactly when. President Putin has shown no appetite for peace, either because he truly believes he can still win, or he's in so deep there's no pulling back now.
The U.S. has announced sweeping new sanctions on Russia and another $2 billion in military aid to Ukraine. The Biden administration is moving to require patients see a doctor in person before getting addictive painkillers, including Vicodin or Oxycontin, or drugs to treat attention deficit disorders. But as CBS's Rob Legere reports,
the government's proposed changes will have no effect on virtual prescriptions of medicines outside of the DEA's list of controlled substances. Those include blood pressure and cholesterol medications and antibiotics.
The proposal is likely to overhaul the way millions of Americans get their prescriptions after relying on doctor's appointments by computer or phone during the pandemic. Baseball's new timing device, the pitch clock, has made its big league debut. CBS's Steve Futterman.
History was made during the San Diego Padres-Seattle Mariners game. If you listen carefully, you will hear the umpire in the background say, time out.
189.
Manny Machado of the Padres was assessed a strike because he wasn't ready fast enough in the batter's box. It's one of baseball's new rules this year designed to speed up the game. Pitchers will have either 15 or 20 seconds to begin their windup, and batters must be ready to hit with 8 seconds left on the pitch clock. Steve Futterman, CBS News.
This is CBS News.
Business owners, General Steel can help save you thousands by owning your own custom-designed buildings. Call 888-98-STEEL or...
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. An Army veteran from Wisconsin is dead after fighting in Ukraine. Andrew Peters was from Marshfield. His family says he died last week fighting with the International Legion. His parents tell Channel 13 in Eau Claire he went to Ukraine in November to use his military skills to help fight off the Russian invasion. The State Department says it's working to bring his remains back to Wisconsin. Look for a new and faster way to get between Chicago, Milwaukee, and the Twin Cities later this year. The Great River Route will offer a second daily round trip through Wisconsin. It's just as fast as the Empire Builder, but the advantage is that it would be more reliable. Wisconsin transportation officials are still working on extending the Hiawatha Route to Madison and Green Bay. In sports, the Bucks are back from the All-Star break. Milwaukee hosts Miami tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues, from the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Only on WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
Life had a remote control. You could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com. The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUK Radio.
We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know how I talk about, you know, changing the world? By, you know, changing your little piece of it. And if all of us decided to do that, you know, get involved, you know, with your local organization, if you're a church person, that, if you're a union person, that, and if you're, you know, whatever gets you involved in your local community, you want to do it. You want to change the world, change your little piece of it. And if we all did that, you know, we might not have to have a National Day of Hate, which is just bizarre to me that someone would go, that's a good idea. We should do that. Leave it to the Nazis. But here to come up and say, hey, how do we change our little piece of it and get involved? I've asked my good friend Steve Pearson to come talk with us. He's the host of the How We Win podcast, but also decided he's going to throw his name in and hat into the ring to run for the California State Assembly. Steve, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, it's so good to be with you. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
So let me ask the first dumb question that I ask everybody who decides they're going to run for office. Why? Why would you put yourself through this, Dave?
That's not a dumb question. It's a totally reasonable question, you know. I didn't see myself doing this. As you said, I host a podcast. I've been working in the progressive media space, using that as a tool to get more people involved in our politics and volunteering. I've worked for an organization called Swing Left for a number of years, helping do the same thing, win elections for good Democrats. And I've been working with the California Democratic Party as an elected delegate and chair of the organizing committee for the last 4 years, also doing the same thing, trying to get, you know, good Democrats elected to vote on things that I care about. And, you know, I guess the old saying goes, if you hang around a barbershop long enough, you're going to end up getting a haircut. You know, it's just this seat opened up because of a domino effect of Adam Schiff running for Senate and my assembly member Laura Friedman running for Adam Schiff's congressional seat. And now it's an opportunity to serve in my home where I've lived for almost 30 years and make a real impact on people's lives, on working people's lives. And that's what, you know, I think a lot of us have been doing for years, is just, where can we make the biggest impact? How can we help people? And this is just an awesome and humbling opportunity to do that.
So what's the message then? I mean, I know, like you said, you've been doing this a long time. I say Democrats are crummy at messaging. And what's Steve Pearson's message? Isn't that the greatest setup you've ever gotten?
Yeah, thanks. You're crummy at it. So, you know, prove me wrong. I don't think Democrats have a messaging problem, because our policies and our platform are wildly popular with the majority of Americans. The biggest problem that Democrats have is we are tied to government, right? We're the party of government. And people have zero trust in government. There was a recent poll that and I'm not sure exactly of the numbers, but approximately 60% of Americans thought if they made enough noise, got out in the streets, used their voices, that they could influence companies, they could influence corporations to do the right thing. That same poll had like 10% of them feeling like they could influence politicians to do the same thing. There's just a very, you know, distrust of government. Government gets a low approval, and Democrats are the party of government. We're tied to that. So I think that's where we really have the biggest problem. How we solve that is we actually make people's lives better. And then we talk about it. And that's what the Biden administration did over the last 2 years. They passed transformative legislation that is going to improve people's lives. Those programs are going to start hitting people in their neighborhoods and communities over the next couple of years. So their lives are going to get better. They're going to get relief from prescription drug prices. They're going to get jobs by, you know, these infrastructure projects coming. We have an historic investment in climate. We just need to talk about that and make sure that people know it's Democrats that fought for those things. And Republicans are going to take credit for it. You know they are, even though they fought us every step of the way.
No. And you're spot on your assessment. And I've been saying it for years that Democrats do a terrible job of tooting their own horn. The one thing that I give credit to Donald Trump over is, man, he was the best self-promotion guy who's ever lived. I mean, he's one of the greatest carnival barkers ever. Because you ask people about infrastructure, and they think Trump actually did something outside of holding, you know, Trump Week or, you know, infrastructure weeks every week with bizarre photo ops. He never actually got anything done, but he did a lot of messaging. And this is where Democrats need to take that message and run with that. Say what they've done, stand on what they've done, and be proud of it. So as an assembly member in the position that you're running, you know, how do you then use that position to make people's lives better? What are the policy aims? What are the ideas that you're bringing to the table?
Yeah, thank you. It's really exciting to be a progressive coming into a supermajority in California, which is the fourth largest economy in the world, the state of California. We have a $280 billion budget. And, you know, when you look at what's happening federally right now, you know, not a lot's going to get done, but we can do a lot in California. We can lead, and where California goes, there goes the nation as well. You know, we have an urgent need to address homelessness, and this is not just an issue for Los Angeles, where I live, or for the state of California. This is a societal failing. And, you know, we have some programs that we are putting in place that we can continue to accelerate when the political will is there to take those tough votes and to, you know, build more housing and, you know, serve the needs of people. 4 to 5 people are dying on the streets in Los Angeles every day. This is, you know, egregious, and it's just awful. It's heartbreaking. So, you know, we can do that. We have to go further and faster on, you know, climate change resiliency. You know, we've done some great things in California. The woman who has my seat, the assembly member who has my seat right now, Laura Friedman, who is vacating, as I said, to run for Congress, she's been spectacular on the environment. So I'm looking forward to carrying that torch and going even further with that. And then, you know, practically for me, my healthcare is a very, very personal issue to me. My daughter was a preemie. She was 1.5 pounds when she was born. She was born 3.5 months early.
Wow.
And if we didn't have amazing union health insurance, we would have been devastated by that. Our family would have been ruined. The bill was over $1 million. And too many people don't have that kind of access to health insurance like we did through our union. Too many people are one injury or one illness away from complete financial ruin. So we have the opportunity to pass single-payer healthcare, CalCare, here in California, and I can't wait to get there and be a champion for that.
Yeah, no, you said, you know, $1 million, you know, and you got to thank the Affordable Care Act for taking caps off of health insurance, because I remember, you know, I worked at a place, we had union healthcare, but they capped, you know, $1 million per person, and you know, we had a friend who, you know, his wife went through that, And we had to go and petition and do all kinds of stuff to get the union to raise that. But the fact of the matter is, without the Affordable Care Act, that cap for many people would have been in place, which, you know, wow. And how is your child?
Oh, she's great. She's 20 now. She's a sophomore in college. She's studying to be a film editor. She's brilliant. And you know, she got great health care. We have something called the Regional Center here in California that gave her occupational therapy and physical therapy in her young years. And she's awesome. She's my favorite.
Good for her. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Steve Pearson, host of the How We Win podcast, also candidate for California State Assembly. If you want to check out his website, pearsonforcalifornia.com. That's pearsonforca.com. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. So let me ask you the other question I ask people who run for office. What's the hill that Steve Pearson dies on? That, you know, everyone says that we're going to compromise, we're going to go, we're going to get stuff done. What's that one thing that you go, this is where my passion is. This is it. This is the hill I die on.
Well, it's people. I mean, I'm on the right show because I'm doing this for working people. You know, like I said, I look for an opportunity to help people wherever I can. It's something that I learned how to be of service early on in my life. I struggled with addiction. I got sober when I was 19, and a central, you know, tenet of my life has been to be of service to other people. And like I said, you know, my wife and I both are almost 30-year union members, and you know, I'm going to be fighting for working people. That's what I came. That's what I'm coming here to do. That's what I'm going to Sacramento to do. And, you know, I've been so blessed early on in this campaign. My first endorsement came from none other than Dolores Huerta, the union civil rights icon. And so, you know, that's the hill I will die on. I will be fighting for people. I will be fighting to lift people out of poverty. I'll be fighting for renters and you know, just any program that I can do to lift people up. Because, you know, obviously there's so much division in our country right now. I mean, you talk about tomorrow being whatever, this national day of hate, or, you know, thing, you know, we are divided. Hate is stoked by the people who want us to not look at what's really going on. It's not so much a left and right issue. It's a top and bottom issue. And that's what's happening in our country. And the people at the top stoke the hate, stoke the fear, stoke the paranoia, so that you know, you don't see that they're taking, you know, money from all of us. It's not a zero-sum game. If we lift people out of poverty, if we champion working people, we are creating a robust economy for everybody. We're not taking pie away from somebody. We're baking more pies. We're making a bigger pie that we can all share in. So that's the hill I die on. I'm here for working people.
So if, for anybody's listening who may be in your area, how can they help? I'm sure donations always help.
That does, of course. You know, sadly, it's egregious. We were talking before we went on the air about elections and in the account, how long you have to run for and the type of money that goes into them. I sure would love this money to go directly to housing, for instance. But you know, I'm excited to have so much support from people, from my fellow resistance buddies who started out in the 2016 after Trump was elected. If you want to join the persistence, as I say, and contribute to the campaign, we would be very, very grateful. Any amount is really helpful. You can go, as you said, to pearsonforcalifornia.com and chip in there, or just sign up to get information, sign up to volunteer. I'd be grateful.
No, it's great stuff. Because look, some of the stuff that you guys are doing out there, I really like. The fast food workers, you know, that FAST Act that was passed, that's going to basically give an entire industry of fast food workers a seat at the literally a seat at the table, a reasonable wage, you know, benefits, decent opportunities, you know, that kind of stuff. I would love to see all across the country. Also, the fact that, you know, if I'm not mistaken, Newsom said you guys are going to start producing your own insulin to make sure that it's something that isn't going to cost you an arm and a leg. There's a lot that we can do to use government, as I say all the time, We do things, you know, through our government collectively that we can't do individually. So I see some of the things that you're doing, and I would love to see it go across the country.
Yeah, I used to say that California was a progressive test lab, but it's not really a test lab because we know these policies work. So it's really where we get to implement these, lift people up, and like I said earlier, where California goes, goes the rest of the country. And you mentioned the FAST Act. There's actually a ballot measure put up by opponents of the FAST Act that are, first of all, effectively stopping the implementation of the FAST Act until this ballot measure goes through. And so we have to fight that too, because fast food workers have been left out of the negotiating, left out of collective bargaining for too long, and this is a really powerful piece of legislation which once again will champion workers.
So last question, 30 seconds. Yeah, why Steve Pearson? What's the ad? What's the elevator pitch?
I'm still working on my elevator pitch because I just announced, but I'll tell you, I came from an organizing background. I came from this community. I've worked in this community for almost 30 years, and, si se puede, we can do this together. We were the resistance. Now we are the persistence, and the persistence is coming to Sacramento.
There you go. Good stuff, Steve. I appreciate the time. I'll look forward to having you back again as this continues. Good stuff, man.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate it, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Steve Pearson. Make sure you check out his website, pearsonforca.com, pearsonforcalifornia.com. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at that. Maybe a donation or maybe volunteer. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I gotta tell you, it's kind of funny. You know, the reports coming out of East Palestine, Ohio, Trump's visit. You know, you go, one, Trump don't look good. I mean, there are some pictures coming out of there. He does not look good. He looks like, he's having a rough go of it. But the story is coming out that he brought in all this water. And how the story is kind of evolving and the questions being asked is this the Trump water that went out of business 13 years ago? Is this what was left in the warehouse from 13 years ago? Because, and this would be so Trump that, this is stuff you should have thrown out, but you're going to give it away and then say, it's the best water. It's the best water ever. It's fabulous water. It's terrific water. It's tremendous water. It's the best water that water's ever watered. And then say, because he actually said, well, then you could have the inferior water, the not so good water. Except if it was sitting in those plastic bottles from 10 years ago, 13 years ago, if it's been sitting in those bottles for 13 years, the kind of bottles that we know now leached chemicals into the water, is he causing an even bigger environmental disaster for the people who are drinking this water? Is he poisoning these people with his Trump water? I mean, is this the weird thing? These are his voters. This is Trump country we're talking about. These were people who were out there in force rallying in his favor, and you're screaming Trump, 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 and the Go Brandon stuff was all over the place. These are his folks. So is he poisoning his own people with the water? Because understand, there was some water with his name on it, and he made light of this. And then there wasn't. The inferior water, I think he called it. So that makes me go, if you were going to take, a couple dozen pallets of water, wouldn't you just have the company that threw your label on those bottles do all of them? Wouldn't that be how that works? Why would you only choose some of them? Unless you were getting rid of the stuff that, just hanging around, we got nothing else to do with it. I'm just going to wait for a good disaster to write it off on my taxes anyway. Yeah. But this is an interesting thing. This is an interesting question. Is he actually poisoning his own people? Now, remember, the whole right wing, screed about, COVID being a hoax, killing off more Republicans than everyone else. I don't know, man. Interesting times. Interesting side of the fence over there. Here's another story. Interesting side of the fence. This woman's name is Deborah Sullivan. She's known in the meme world as the meme queen. She's the QAnon meme queen. Yep, the Q kooks, the people who think that Democrats are running this Democratic elites, not all Democrats, just the elite ones, that they're running a child sex trafficking ring. The Pizzagate folks. The basement that didn't exist that had all the children in it that made the guy go with a gun and hold up a pizza place. Yeah. Evidently, she's been really prolific in her work. I gotta wonder if she's actually got a job. But she's produced more than 4,500 memes about the pedophile, the pedocrats, and the pedophile conspiracy. Many of them, that are saying that Trump was the hero. He was out there fighting the good fight and taking on the secret cabal of child traffickers. You've heard the nonsense. You got to know where this is going, right? Because I'm not going to just bring up some kook for no reason. Because again, she's deep into this world because she knows Donald Trump is out there fighting the sex traffickers and the pedophiles. Evidently, her son earlier this month was convicted of, repeatedly abusing his stepdaughter in Oklahoma City. Actually, a pedophile. Now, she's defending him. He's innocent, and actually went after the 12-year-old girl, calling her a horrible liar, and, I'm sure much. And I got to wonder when the memes are going to start against this 12-year-old. What's interesting, she's now going to the Q kooks and saying, please, Q crazies, help get Trump to come out and defend her pedophile son. This is the kind of stuff that's just, you can't make it up. You cannot, I couldn't sit down and tell you and it be anywhere believable that a person would be out there being the savior and the crusader. I guess I could. It reminds me of when I was a kid. There was a guy who was, he was the number one donor in our parish. Now, we were a poor parish, so, of course, the church and everybody, worshiped this guy. In fact, I think he may have won the car in the car raffle, like two of the 5 years that I remember, because he just donated him back. But I remember him on Sunday, being all over the priest and, being the big, show. And but he was on Saturday night. He was walking the stroll with the hookers. And it's one of those things, family man, right there in the front row now with the wife and three kids on Sunday, big smiles on their face. And Saturday nights, doing the role. It's that kind of thing. It's that kind of hypocrisy. It's that kind of just pure ridiculousness. They're the ones always pointing their finger at somebody. And I find a lot of these Q people to be in that world. The hate people who are, But I guess I shouldn't be surprised. Should I? Are you surprised by a story like this? Because it seems in this world, the people who are out there, you know, saying all this stuff is going on and believing there's all this conspiracy are the ones actually doing it. I mean, that's the thing that gets me. When someone makes an accusation and says, you know, they're over on the other side. I know they're doing this. And you go, how do you know? Oh, yeah, because you're probably doing it. You're probably the one. What a strange.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
CBS News Brief. Very unusual weather in California. CBS's Steve Futterman.
Many parts of Southern California have already seen the white stuff come down, many for the first time. It all has to do with low temperatures, low enough in some cases to turn rain into snow.
As the war in Ukraine enters its second year, the U.S. announces new sanctions on Russian companies and people. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby.
We impose sanctions on more than 200 individuals and entities, including both Russian and third country actors across Europe, Asia, and the Middle East. We sanctioned additional actors tied to Russia's defense and technology industry.
Disbarred lawyer Alec Murdoch faces a second day of questioning in his double murder trial. Loyola Law School professor Lori Levinson says he may regret the decision to testify.
Sometimes lawyers make the worst witnesses on the stand because they think they can outthink or outsmart the people who are questioning them.
Murdoch is accused of killing his wife and son. CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. Governor Evers wants more money to boost funding to local governments, and it's based on a Republican idea. The governor's proposal in his two-year budget would dedicate 20% of Wisconsin's sales tax collections to shared revenue, which would go to towns and communities to help pay for things like fire and police. Despite this plan originating from a Republican idea, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says legislators will offer dramatically different solutions than the ones the governor has laid out. The winner of the U.S. Championship Cheese Contest is Eric Schmidt of Connecticut, picking up first place with an aged Gouda cheese. Schmidt grew up in Monticello. First runner-up honors go to Red Barn Family Farms in Appleton. Overall, Wisconsin earned gold medals in 54 classes. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Civic Media promised you something big to celebrate our new and still growing network of radio stations. When we announced the one-day $1 million advertising giveaway for Wisconsin businesses, you responded.
Just wanted to echo your sentiments about the advertising. That's really a cool deal and really remarkable.
$1 million of free advertising. Now, if you missed this chance to work with our team, go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. One of our local sales pros will get right back to you. Civicmedia.us and sponsorship.
Weather on this snowy day in Milwaukee could be brought to us by your pizza delivery business. Can you imagine how many families are snuggled in their homes enjoying hot, tasty pizza? Weather makes the phone ring for just $199 per week. Call us at 608-819-8255.
As goes Wisconsin.
Mandela Barnes, future runs. Not yes, not no.
You know, I'm not closing the door, right? Like, taking a loss is not easy. And it's tough, too, when it's such a razor-thin margin. You know, I know some people who just get up right away and decide they want to run again. Yeah. Like, I'm not there. But, you know, it's all timing.
Celebrating all things Wisconsin. As goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Weekdays 11 to 2 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Earl Ingram.
I mean, for heaven's sakes, anybody who's heard Congresswoman Bobart from Colorado and Marjorie Taylor Greene and others, you just have to ask the question, if I'm a Republican, why would I continue to support that foolishness?
Asking the tough questions, searching for the answers we're all looking for. The Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings 8 to 11 on Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
Yet the corporate powers insist on treating nurses as just a cost to be cut, arguing that hospitals must have staffing flexibility. In other words, cut nurses, raise profits.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, interesting bit of news. There, everyone knows Marty Walsh is stepping down as Secretary of Labor. Going to take the gig with the NHL Players Association. And the question is, who's going to replace him? Who will be the next Labor Secretary? And I said from the beginning, you can go back to, you know, right when the Biden administration began picking their folks. I said my choice for Labor Secretary was Sarah Nelson. And I'm glad to see that she's one of the top contenders that they're vetting at this moment to replace Marty Walsh. I think she would be fantastic. I think Marty Walsh did a great job of getting out and putting a good face on the Department of Labor. I want somebody who's going to use it much the way you see Republicans doing, moving in a direction that's going to help working people and really making it the advocate that it should be. Now, it's going to be interesting to see which way they go. There's the top labor official who's, I guess, would be the acting if they don't find someone before Walsh leaves. There's Julie Hsu, that's her. There's Sarah, who's the head of the flight attendants union. And then they're throwing DeMarcus Smith out as well. And we'll see, you know, he's obviously the executive director of the National Football League's Players Union. So I'm going to be interested to see where the administration goes. My choice from the beginning has always been our friend Sarah Nelson. So if I could throw my hat in the ring on that, that's where my vote would go. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. And hey, the National Day of Hate's coming up. So, you know, get your hate on. Best our good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, to share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So Saturday is going to be the National Day of Hate. The neo-Nazis and the National Socialist idiots, whatever, they're having their big day of hate. Will you be celebrating?
No, I think I'll pass that one. Okay. Yeah, I think I made my dislike list years ago and then had to computerize it, and then I thought, okay, it's not worth, you know, reading it. So
it's a lot of effort.
It takes too much. You have to burn a lot of brain cells, you know, to do it. Of course, some of these people aren't going to have brain cells to burn, so it doesn't matter.
There you go. But here's the weird thing is, you know, this was a kind of like a no-brainer, so to speak. You see what I did there? It's kind of like a no-brainer here where the Republican Party should be denouncing this, but I don't see it. I'm not seeing it.
What's the, you know, it's the United States Jewish community is on alert because, you know, they're planning the white supremacists are planning the Day of Hate, and so the groups are on alert. But I mean, and sometimes with these groups, it's, I mean, they should be denounced, but also it's just, I mean, I wish, I don't know, if the media could ignore them, maybe it would help. But you know, we've always said that about a lot of the groups to come to towns and yeah. And everybody gets excited about them. And, you know, it's better to denounce them, but if they could just, you know, be ignored and go away, it'd be so nice, wouldn't it?
It would. I mean, if we didn't have to deal with Nazis, that would be a good thing. If we were a country that didn't have these problems. But, you know, but to that point, you know, we're coming up on the one-year anniversary of what's going on in Ukraine. And, you know, Nazis are kind of at the center of that as well.
Well, you know, with the it was an interesting announcement that was just made about China, and I was asked today, earlier today, about were there any of the, you know, behind the scene deals on this, and I think that the fact that Blinken, our Secretary of State, went to Munich and they got the balloon issue settled. Neither country, you know, backtrack. We said, hey, you know, you have a spy balloon, and China said they don't. But they got that out front to get, you know, get rid of the balloon talk. And then the same minister that met with Blinken went to meet with Putin. So I have to believe that somewhere along the line we pushed the issue in back-channel talks for China to at least do what it did, which is a good step to say, you know, there needs to be a potential ceasefire.
Yeah, no, there needs to be a ceasefire, and Russia needs to leave, pack their bags and go home.
Right, exactly.
You know, the thing that's interesting to me is, you know, I'm hearing all these people go, well, they should the diplomacy. I'm going, okay, what do you think you can deal with? What's the deal? well, give them this portion and that portion. No, that's not how this works. That's not diplomacy. That's just stealing parts and giving stuff away, which is exactly why Ukraine is fighting. That's the whole point.
Yeah, and the ceasefire, if it can happen, you know, if it's violated, then everything has to go back to, you know, the way it was. But the ceasefire in itself is okay as long as, and you raise a great point, all of a sudden conditions aren't thrown out on the table. At that point, the Ukraine would have to say no. You know, for example, if Russia wants to, yeah, we'll do a ceasefire, but we need the eastern part of the Ukraine. No, that's not in the works.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to me. And look, you're a little bit older than I am, but you know, we both grew up kind of in the same era during the Cold War. I'm struggling with the number of people that I see siding with Putin in this moment. You know, and maybe it's just maybe I'm just too simple-minded in this. You know, my distrust and disdain for Soviet overreach or Russian overreach, that this is where my mind goes. But I got to tell you, I'm surprised to see so many people, especially on the right, you know, siding with this guy.
Well, here's the thing about what's happened, and this is even beyond the Ukraine. And I agree with you. I mean, I remember, you know, doing drills under desks in case we were nuked, you know.
Yep, because those Catholic school desks prevented nuclear fallout.
And we said prayers, too. Yeah. I remember that, you know, clearly doing that. Friends of ours had built bomb shelters in the backyard, you know, with cement blocks in the ground and things. So, yes, it's in our minds. And then Putin took over after Russia, you know, Soviet Union was broken up. And then Russia was, quote, becoming a democracy. And Putin took over. And there were a lot of people that thought Putin was okay, and he acted like he was okay. And then his KGB side always was there, never went away. But to me, the stopping point here, where you draw the red line, is not just the invasion of Ukraine, but also they have used the nuclear word. Putin's done it. His, you know, defense ministers have done it. I mean, to threaten to do nukes. I wish we would have, we meaning not just us, but NATO, would have done a flyover a long time ago, you know, stop them from the flyover. When they start to use the word nuclear, and because they don't have their way, there's trouble. Yeah. There's trouble for the world and trouble for Europe.
Now, what do you make of now, I guess Putin says they're not pulling out of the New START treaty. But suspending it, pausing it, I don't know what that means. What exactly did he do?
Well, I mean, I don't think we know, because, you know, Putin will use all types of verbiage. And now that is one of the problems with the ceasefire, you know, because there's so many mixed signals. On one hand, you know, China goes over to meet with Putin. They say, well, there's going to be a, you know, potential ceasefire. We should have that. Then the other hand, Russia suspends participation in the new START nuclear treaty. You know, so where is he going? Where is he really at? I don't think anybody knows.
Yeah. What do you make of Ted Cruz saying that this is good for us, that him pulling out is good for us?
I'm sorry, Ted Cruz saying
that him pulling out of the New START treaty is actually good for the U.S. He tweeted out today that he believes it's good for us.
No, it's not. I mean, it's not. This is a, you know, this is a nuclear treaty between Russia and the U.S. And by Putin pulling out of it, he is suspending, taking a step back from the last remaining nuclear arms treaty between the U.S. and Russia. And then he's vowing to still continue the military campaign. I think Ted Cruz is wrong. Look, no matter how much we can't stand Putin or, you know, everything he's done, on the other side of this thing, you know, for Putin to pull out of the communications on the START treaty is not a good thing. That should continue irregardless of what's going on in the Ukraine. So I think, you know, Cruz is wrong. I mean, here's what I would say to Ted Cruz. Okay, so what do you do now? What's your exit plan? If there's no communication on the start tree, what's your exit plan?
Yeah. No, and that's my point in all of this. Look, you know, okay, so we're calling for diplomacy, and I'm with you. Let's call for diplomacy. I want diplomacy. I want this to stop. But by starving Ukraine of the opportunity to defend themselves, and that's all we're doing. You know, we're not sending our troops over there. I was not in favor of putting U.S. anything over Ukraine. I wasn't in favor of putting any boots on the ground. This is a Ukraine thing. Give them the tools they need. Give them what they need to defend themselves. It doesn't make any sense to me to now pull that back. And look, this is going to be this could be a long drawn out war. And again, as we as Americans, I guess our appetite for war is dwindling. But if we do allow them to pull back, I then got to worry that down the road it gets worse, because you know I still believe that the idea is to get the old band back together. What happens if he goes into Estonia or Latvia or Lithuania or Poland, and then NATO's got to get involved? We are then talking nuclear war.
Right. I mean, look, Zelensky has said that you know he'll await details on the China, you know, request for a peace plan. So he said that, which is a good response. And the reason being is that he's not, you know, objecting to it because is this a silent way for Putin to try to save face and get out of this, et cetera, et cetera. But on the other hand, Zelensky's not dumb, and we can't be either. I keep saying the we, Rick, but it's us and NATO when I say we.
Right.
We can't be, you know, ignorant about this. If they do eventually have a ceasefire, there's got to be such caution, because if that's just an attempt for Putin to all of a sudden do a surprise move, then it's really, really bad. So now, the other thing, too, in the China proposition for a ceasefire, of course, you know what's out there, end all the sanctions for Russia.
And do we do that?
Well, the only way we could do it, look, the Iran nuclear treaty, although, yeah, sure, we didn't get the ballistic missiles. I fully understand that, and we, you know, transferred money to Iran. I understand that too. But the Iran nuclear treaty and the agreement to take the sanctions back worked because the centrifuges were rolled back. It worked. And then Trump became president, and for the first year, it continued to work. And then John Crazy Bolton came in, and Pompeo, and of course the two of them never saw a war they didn't like, and then all of a sudden they canceled everything. So people said, well, see, the sanctions didn't work. No, the sanctions did work, but something had to kick in. Iran had to have the inspectors on the ground. Iran had to take back the centrifuges. So could the sanctions work? Yes, they could. However, the sanctions aren't going to work if the process in the United States and anybody else involved in the sanctions at the UN, if they roll them back and then Russia decides to, you know, pull out. This has to be one of those moves where, you know, Russia stops what it's doing and reverses itself, and then the sanctions start to reverse, which is okay.
Yeah.
If just like the Iran nuclear deal. But again, you know, the deal was canceled and everything went back to the way it was.
So what do you do with, you know, because there are people saying Putin's guilty of war crimes. Do you believe he's guilty of war crimes?
Oh, yes.
So what do you do?
Yes,
do you just go, okay, we're going to have a ceasefire. We're going to go back to our respective corners. What do we then do? Do we just forget about it and move on? Or has there got to be some accountability?
Well, the reality of that, my answer of what I would like to see is accountability, the Hague, et cetera, et cetera. What I know is going to happen if Russia leaves, the sanctions start to reverse, somebody might file a normal, more, you know, filing against him at the Hague for war crimes. But you know what? It's not going to be pushed. It won't be pushed by anybody.
What do you make of Trump saying that in 24 hours he'd just get everybody into a room and knock heads and get a deal done? He'd get it done.
With Putin?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Putin's a chess player. And a lot of times, you know, we think he's going a certain direction, and he's seven other moves to the other way.
George Bush's, I looked into his soul, and well, that thing in Helsinki, I don't have great hope. But speaking of Trump, and I got to change topics here real quick. I was in East Palestine on Wednesday, brought some water with him. I guess the question I have, how much was the Trump water? How much was the inferior water? And was the Trump water, the 13-year-old Trump water, was it vintage water?
Well, I looked at the Newsweek fact check on it, and it seemed to say that the water was not, 13 years old. Here's the problem with all of this. You know, what boots Pete Buttigieg wore? The water Trump brought.
Yeah. No.
And there's some real significant horror stories up there still existing. I mean, and people are never going to be able to sell their homes. And the chemicals that are still potentially in the ground. My granddaughter was supposed to play volleyball up there. They've canceled all of it and moved it about 15 miles away. And like I told my daughter today, make sure when they go to the gym, which is now 15 miles away, they don't drink any of the tap water, you know?
Yeah, East Palestine's the New Mexico.
I mean, so, and I know, Trump went up there and you did all that. And Buttigieg, he mishandled this. The actual reality is there was communication from transportation and FEMA, et cetera, early on, with the governor of Ohio and the governor's office. It's just that they mishandled, Buttigieg's mishandled, kind of almost panicked. He took a picture the other day, yesterday, of a reporter following him in the street and all that. And I don't know, there was just something that went wrong on the communication, end of it. But then he goes up there, he shows up, and the story becomes his boots. I mean, give me a break,
No. That's our media culture. I mean,
corporate media, talk about trite. Yep. His boots became the story. I don't care if he was wearing, house slippers. That's not the story, and they made it the story. So it just became a fiasco. They've got to dig into it, find out about it, find out about the safety brakes, how you label things. They weren't labeled. And then, number one, what are they going to do with the town?
No, and that's the question. And this is, you've given me an idea of what has to happen then. I think these railroads should have to buy up these people's homes at the other day's market value, and then pay their costs to move and all of that stuff as well, to make them whole. I mean, there's got to be a way to make people whole in this.
Well, I was saying this today when I was asked about this. Well, how far is their liability? The break, the federal government hollowed out the break. Well, here's the point. If you've got a utility truck, in Ohio, American Electric Power, and the utility truck goes through your living room, right? You don't start to say, well, they should have had a guardrail out front. The utility truck goes through your living room. The utility company makes your house whole.
Yep.
That's the bottom line. Now, it was one house maybe that it hit, but I use that example because, the railroad needs to make the entire town whole, the entire thing. The railroad has huge profits. And if you look at the potential railroad strike that was out there, it was about people working too long, about how the railroad treated them. It was about safety factors. And now Norfolk and Southern are responsible.
Yep. And they should take some of that stock buyback money and make these people whole. And that should be the message.
$25,000, they need to, help them because the houses are going to be worthless.
Yeah. No, and like the one guy in the video said, anybody going to eat any of the crops coming from out of the soil here?
Right.
Probably not.
Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
There is so much here. But, Bob, I appreciate the time. As always, good stuff, my friend.
Thank you, Rick.
Gonna take a quick break, right back to wrap things up. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people.
Are you
Tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute. Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Remember, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, by all means, especially the angry stuff. Jimmy writes me, Rick, I never hear you talk about the mass exodus of millionaires leaving blue states. He says New York City saw 1,452 people with wealth over $25 million leave in 2021. He said, the rich aren't going to pay your commie woke taxes. There are over 80,000 millionaires in New York City. And yeah, some of them leave. And, 1,452 people, wealthy, rich people left. You know why? It was 2021. They were getting out of Dodge over the pandemic. They were going to other places. And you know where they went mostly? Yeah, because they actually tracked this stuff. They went to New Jersey. They retired to Florida, like a lot of people do. They went to Connecticut. Those are the top three places that those 1,452 enormously wealthy people went to. And you go, why'd they go to New Jersey? Well, they went to New Jersey to pay similar taxes because it's closer to New York City. Maybe they wanted to get out of the crowded, to get into the Garden State, or as I call it, the Chemical State. Some of them retired to Florida, and they went through some of the names of the people who went. Carl Icahn, who, he said he went for tax reason. Go down to Florida where you can not pay any taxes. David Tepper, who's worth, like $18 billion, is the owner of the Carolina Panthers. He went down to that area. So you got a bunch of these billionaires who saw a chance to retire into the that's where they went. You saw people of means leaving the city during the pandemic. Yeah, it happened. And your point? The city is thriving. Now, it's interesting. They say that, these 1,400 left. Actually, the number of millionaires in the city has grown by over 10,000 during the last 2 years. So this idea that, oh, my God, the rich people are going to leave. Oh, all this clutching of the pearls. They're leaving California. They're going. You know where they're not going? They're not going to your red states like Mississippi or Alabama. They're not. So there's your thoughts, Jimmy. Sue writes, Rick, have you heard about why Oklahoma Senator Jim Inhofe retired? Other than he was as old as dirt, I had to look this one up because I didn't know what the rationale was. Evidently, Jim Inhofe, the former senator, the guy who said about climate change, that there's no such thing as climate change because of the snowball he had in his hand, because snowballs, no such thing. Evidently, his decision to retire was due to side effects from long COVID. That's what I guess has been reported. He had COVID. He had long COVID. Inhofe said five or six others have long COVID, but I'm the only one who admits it. Now, remember, Inhofe is a guy who voted against multiple aid packages when we were talking about the virus. Remember, it's all a hoax. Yeah, it's all a hoax. Now, here's the thing. Am I happy to see him go? Not really, because you got crazier. What was that, Mark Wayne Mullen? Oklahoma, come on. And finally, Elon Musk is back in the news. Evidently, politicians who, we used to keep, there was a group that was out there, screenshotting all of their crazy tweets. Anytime they said something cringeworthy, politicians or people running for office, there was someone over at ProPublica who tracked them and I guess had been doing it since 2012. So when you say dumb stuff that maybe, and then you delete it really quick, oh, I don't want anyone to see that. Evidently, ProPublica is not going to be able to do that anymore. Not because they don't have the money, but because Twitter's not, evidently has gone and deleted the function, disabled the function that ProPublica used to track the tweets being deleted. So yeah, the same guy who fired a bunch of people because his tweets weren't getting enough attention, making it easy to delete things so no one remembers. It's Winston Smith on steroids. We're living 1984, folks. Anyway, have a great hate weekend. Spread a little love over hate weekend. Show a little love for a Nazi. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.